Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 67. We are covering the 2019 Valero Texas Open on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Steve. How was your short break over to New York last week?
Tiring.
Tiring, yeah. Back on UK time, yeah.
All I will say is that New York takes a metropolis to a new level. So, you know, we're local to London here, aren't we, over in the United Kingdom? And London's a very busy world city, but it's nowhere near the level of intensity of New York City. It's cracking. I will be going back. My missus is already planning another trip.
It must have gone well then.
Although she said it's going to be when I'm 50, which is 4 years' time. I think that's far too far away for my life. I said to her, I won't make 50. What is the point?
Yeah.
Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we're available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. You can follow us. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, which we added a couple of weeks ago, and a myriad of different pod channels. You can also listen via our Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. And this is the important bit. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. And naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Next week's show, Paul, being the Masters pod,
which will
be our biggest pod of the year. So, if you want to get your name, if you want to get your views out on the biggest podcast of 2019, do it this week. Leave your name in the review so we can read it out in the podcast. I have a review from last week. It's from 7795 Jim, and he's in the United States of America. Starting the Golf Week Here is the title. 5 stars. I listen to these guys every week. Always look forward to hearing what they have to say. They have led me to a couple of winners over the past year, so keep up the great content. Thank you very much, Jim.
Yeah, very nice, Jim. Thank you very much indeed.
I'll tell you one thing. We shouldn't really be making this about my trips away, but one thing I did remember from my New York visit, because I went to the One Observatory, did all the tourist rubbish, went to the top of the Empire State, blah, blah, blah. Was when I was at the top of the Empire State, I was looking around and I'm thinking, well, we got a review from Hoboken over there the other day, and then got a review from New Jersey. There's just loads of Golf Betting System podcast listeners that live in the New York City area.
Yeah.
Amazing, eh?
It's nice.
I made absolutely no effort to meet any of them. It is. And do you know what else I saw out there, Paul? By the way, listeners, it's the first time that Paul and I have spoken about my trip away, hence why I'm nattering. DraftKings adverts. DraftKings bookmaker adverts on their sports channels.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, of course, when you see the ad, you're sitting in Manhattan in a bar watching it, and it says that it's for New Jersey residents only. So you can't actually, clearly, if you're a New York resident, no good.
Okay, that doesn't really make a great deal of sense, does it? But there you go.
Well, I suppose a great proportion of commuters go into Manhattan to do their daily work. So if they're sitting there having a beer after work and they know that they can go. I mean, how does it work? So
listeners, tell us,
you know, there's a lot of different ways to contact. If I'm sitting in Manhattan on my phone and I want to have a bet, do I have to go to New Jersey to physically put the bet on, or is it the fact that I'm a resident of New Jersey?
You'd imagine there's some kind of geo restrictions, wouldn't you? But who knows? Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out, wouldn't it? So presumably this is for the sports book rather than the fantasy golf they're advertising, or fantasy sports they're advertising on the TV.
Yeah, no, it was their sports book betting service that they were advertising.
Very good.
Pushing it very hard, lots and lots of different adverts across all the ad breaks. Mm-hmm. DraftKings all over it like a rash.
All moving.
So that
on.
Was interesting. Yeah. And bearing in mind that the World Match Play was on, whatever sports channels I had no content of the Dell World Match Play at all until Tiger hold that approach shot.
Right, okay.
And then it was on every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
With him standing. And then they were all over the Rory McIlroy Tiger Woods match for the last 16 match.
Yeah, but they will have been. I guess it's such a huge attraction, wasn't it? A bit disappointing the way it went, to be fair, because up to that point, Rory, who I'd backed pre-event, had been playing some lovely golf, and then just couldn't make a putt, could he, in that game? Rather disappointingly. He'd moved right into strong favourite.
That's a fascinating point for me, because Rory was back. Rory's, you know, back to his very best because he won the Players.
Mm.
And he played very well at the Players. But no one ever really got to the point of putting him under any pressure, did they? He was always just kind of edging away when he needed to.
Yeah.
And then put him in a high-pressure environment against Tiger Woods in a head-to-head match, and he couldn't make a putt.
Yeah.
So what does that tell us about next week and McIlroy?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? When it's easy, when the pressure's off a little bit, I guess. But he just sauntered through the first three rounds. There was no, barely broke a sweat. It was very straightforward. I think he'd moved into he was sub 4-1 to win the tournament at that point, going into the round of 16.
You said that though, didn't you? You said that the group would be absolutely no problem for it. And that's the way it worked out. Yeah,
and it's
all part of your logic.
It was relatively straightforward compared to a lot of the other groups that certainly didn't go the way people had seen them. But it
was carnage, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, in the top left bracket, the way I looked at it, I didn't go for Kuchar because his bracket sitting there with John Rahm at the top of it looked very dangerous. He had Dustin Johnson at the top half of that section as well, should he get through. And I swerved away from it, and then of course he wins the group, makes his way all the way through to the final, and I was suddenly a Kevin Kisner fan at that point, because I really don't want to
You did say in the pod that Kuchar was the one you regretted not backing.
Yeah. Well, no, had he been in a slightly more straightforward path out of the group for a start, then it would have been an easier back. But then I suspect he'd have been a longer price. I mean, you weigh it all up, don't you? Disappointing one was Poulter, really, because he beat Kisner in the first round. He got through to the playoff with him in his group, and then lost that playoffs, went out at that point. And of course, Kisner went on to win the whole thing. So, that was potentially the one, had that gone the other way, where someone with the match play prowess of Ian Poulter could have pushed on further. But it's a tough game, a tough event to try and work out, isn't it? It's a tough event to try and.
It is, but it does on. this Pete Dye speciality came through again, didn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, look at the two finalists.
Yep.
And length off the tee clearly had absolutely nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Oh no. And you look at the course and the way the course sets up, and some of the holes you can really attack, some of the holes are tailor made for a longer driver, and some of them you've just got to be accurate. And
like the 18.
Yeah, I think you boil it all down, and those players who get on with that style of track, and the Pete Dye tracks as well, as you say, they've started to shine through. It's an interesting angle, but unfortunately, that's the last time that we're going back to Austin Country Club, isn't it? So we'll have a new...
Is that true?
It was 4 years. I mean, I've looked around to try and find where the venue is for next year, and I've seen nothing written about it so far.
I thought I saw something just before the event kicked off saying that they'd extended it.
Oh,
right,
okay. Okay, yeah, missed that. Good.
But I might be wrong.
Could well be the case. We shall see.
I think they might have extended it.
We'll find out in due course, I'm sure.
Lucas Bjerregaard's now up to 43rd in the world after that.
He was impressive.
Impressive performance.
He was impressive, yeah. And we know he's a good player. We know how good he can be, but... up against some of those top players, he really put on a decent shift. So certainly an eye catcher for the week, has to be said. G-Mac got over the line. Yeah, go on.
Well, he could have got to the final. I mean, I was watching the semi-final with Kuchar, and he managed to get level, I think, on 15.
Yep.
So they were level with three to play. And then he just made an absolutely awful chip on the par five.
Mm.
chipped it, I think, 12, 15 foot past, and you just think, you've got to nose that down, and it's birdie, and we go to 17 all square.
Yeah.
No. And that he cracked at that point. He kept it going, though. He holed a nice putt on 17 to keep the match going, but Kuchar just had a bit too much, right?
Did you
see anything about this Garcia, Kuchar fiasco? Yeah. Or is it just constantly picking at prey on social media?
There's a lot being written about it, and I don't know if you have you seen the.
No, I didn't see it.
They did a little a couple of minutes chat afterwards to kind of settle the score, and Kuchar was saying how well that Garcia took it, and I don't know. I think what it shows you is Kuchar's got this ruthless streak within him where, you know, he wants to win, or he you know, he clearly got a direction of what it is that he wants to do. Whether it was right or wrong, at the end of the day, Garcia made the mistake. You know, I think, you know, Kuchar is well within his rights to not do anything about it. But, you know, in the spirit of sportsmanship, would you have given him the next hole? I don't know. You know, in the heat of the moment, with Garcia screaming at him up the fairway on the next, I think I'd have done the same thing and told him to stuff it, personally. There you go.
Is that what happened? Was he screaming at him?
Yeah, they were having a, you know, the ball.
He didn't say that in the car. He said, oh, you know, I said to him on the next tee, you know, what can we do to make this better? I didn't realise he then started screaming
at
him.
They were walking up the fairway and Garcia was just, you know, yap, telling him what he could do, and about giving him a putt on the next hole and all of that. And Kuchar was just kind of stoic with it and did nothing and carried on, won the match. As you do. But you boil it all down. Garcia's made the mistake, isn't he? And he's just, you know, just out of petulance, really. C'est la vie. But yeah, you know, going back to the other events, G-Mac got over the line. You know, we know that he's got a bit of a challenge to try and get into the Open Championship, isn't he, at Portrush this year. So it's a big incentive for him to be playing well over the next few weeks and months, and it's not the first time that he's won in that kind of environment, is it?
In my mind, Matt Kuchar can't win the Masters because he isn't quite long enough, but we know that he's an Augusta specialist, and he's sitting there at 50-1 right now, level with Henrik Stenson and Mark Leishman in the betting market, and I just think, do you know what? That ain't a bad price. You know, 50-1, and you're likely to get, what, 8 places on Matt Kuchar to finish in the top 8? A guy that's been probably one of the most impressive players this season.
Mm.
I don't think he wins it, but I tell you what, I'd be surprised if he blows up and misses the cut.
Well, he's come relatively close.
His results around Augusta are very good, aren't they? I think, is it 3 or 4 top fives, top sixes?
Yeah, he's been in the vicinity, hasn't he? I can't recall him actually being, you know, dead in it right up to the very end in any of the Masters. Mm. But he's certainly got some decent enough finishes. If you're looking for an each way place, then potentially.
Mm. Worst bets then. Talking of specialisms, because we were talking about Pete Dye designs for the World Match Play. You've got to look at Graham McDowell, haven't you, on a coastal track.
Mm.
I made a note, and I said it in last week's podcast about the Corrales. Try and get Pete. I was focusing on people that were sitting in the top of my rolling GIR.
Yeah.
And he was in the top. He was the last one I looked at, because he just snuck in at 30th spot in my analysis. And I thought, 30 is good enough. And I'd made the fatal mistake of, one, focusing far too much on the PGA Tour statistics, and two, it's a 7,600-yard par 72. Yeah. Graham McDowell can't win it.
It's the length that put me off him, I must say.
And the price wasn't brilliant, was it? No, I mean, when he won at Mayakoba a couple of years ago, he was 50-1, and he was 40-1 coming off, like, 43rds and 52nds and all this.
Mm.
But there was something there to grab onto. Because he'd won at Mayakoba. And again, someone that plays very, very well, El Chameleon, because it was last year it was Garnett. This year, Graham McDowell. So, two notes for me for next year. Forget about PGA Tour stats, go on your gut. And secondly, just focus on guys that are hitting plenty of greens and play well at Camellia.
Yeah, and it's one of those events where you do get quite a few players from off of the PGA Tour playing, don't you? Even, you know, either the European Tour or some of the lesser tours as well. So it's a bit more of a mixed field. So I guess if you got hung up on the PGA Tour stats in isolation, then it could lead you down.
I used to also back Chris Strood every single year at El Chameleon.
Mm.
And he'd often finish third or fourth, like year after year. And he threw away the actual victory, didn't he? Bogeyed the last two to hand it to McDowell.
Yeah, he was very
good. So that El Chameleon Mayakoba link is absolutely cast iron.
Mm.
And also, you just look at it, Garnett, those none of them are big bombers. So you think, 7,600 yards. I don't know if it plays to its full length because the coverage is so loose. I don't know if they bring the tees forward or whatever they do. That something's not quite. I think as we said last week, because the three of the par fives are too long even for the bombers, it becomes a bit of a wedge fest.
Mm.
Anyway. It wasn't the best, it has to be said. We're not the best of runs, are we? We need to snap out of it. We're getting a lot of guys that aren't converting at the end of tournaments, and we're getting a lot of guys that are playing three very good rounds and one crap round.
Oh, Mikko Kohonen in India. He was. I know. You know, there'll be 15 different players that you could have looked at over the final 6-8 holes, and you know there'd be a sob story for virtually all of them because there were so many players in with a chance. You know, if you'd backed Julian Suri, then you'd be absolutely screwing from the way that... Well, the 14th hole, where it all fell apart for him, it's such a brutal hole. It's such a brutal hole in India. And his shot in, his approach into 14 was, you know, it was a foot away from being good. And he makes quadruple bogey. And that's just the measure of that particular hole. And Kohonen, who I'd back pre-event... He very nearly birdied the 14th. He played an outstanding approach shot. He left himself 15 feet. He burnt the edge. So he's sitting there two shots behind, standing on the par 5, par 5 15th, where most of the players ahead of him have still got to play this 14th hole. And I'm thinking, actually, you know, he's got a real stab at this. He's got a real stab at it. So the next you see, I'm sure I saw his ball in the fairway. Didn't see his drive. I'm sure I saw his ball in the fairway. So I think, okay, he's going to have a go at the green. And then you didn't see him for 10 minutes because all of this was kicking off with Suri as he was knocking the ball backwards and forwards over the top of the 14th green. And next thing you see, he's made a double. And it's like, where did he
go? I saw that pop up on my computer screen. And so I realised at that point that you'd be... You'd be shouting expletives and switching the TV over.
How the TV survived that, I don't really know. But we shall go again this week and have a crack at the Valero Texas Open. Eh?
We are going to record a Masters podcast this week. We've also been led to believe that Barry O'Hanrahan's going to be on the show.
Mm.
Our last conversations were that he's returned from Dubai after going to the top of the Burj Khalifa and also throwing himself out the side of a plane. He survived that, apparently.
Yep. Lived to tell the tale.
He's lived to tell the tale, and he's going to be on our Masters podcast that we're going to record later this week. So it's going to be our Masters pre-show. So that will be coming out later this week. And then on Monday or potentially Tuesday morning, we'll have to work out it's going to work. We'll be doing our Masters Selections podcast. As ever, we are rather excited about the Masters.
Yeah, nearly there.
Interesting to see that Coral have already gone 10 places each way at 50 odds on the Masters next week. And that has to be taken into account because clearly I think all of the other bookmakers are pretty much in their still anti-post mode. So until they go into their real prices, it'll all settle down in terms of where the odds sit and where the each way places sit. But Coral already got out there. They're 10 places each way, a fifth the odds for the Masters next week. You would assume that there will be others that have to follow that.
I think now that they've made that stand, I think you'll see another couple go 10. We shall see. But yeah, I mean, on the basis that Paddy and Betfair and Ball Sports recently have all been going 8 as standard on the PGA Tour, I'd be surprised if one, if not all of those, don't take a chance on it. But we shall see. Yeah, we'll find out. I suspect, as you say, it'll be once they start forming their final markets, which I guess are probably likely to come Sunday. They may wait till Monday, but you might see some of these on Sunday this week after the bookers have all got their Grand National heads out of the way.
Out of the way, yeah. Are you backing Tiger Roll at odds on this this year for the Grand National?
No.
Did I see 4-1 about Tiger Roll?
Yeah.
Wow. It
doesn't interest me at the Grand National, that kind of price, I must say.
Good horse, but that's kind of red rum territory, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyway, sorry, we digress. I know that we have golf punters mainly on here, but we're talking about the Grand National, which is our biggest steeplechase. Oh, it's the biggest steeplechase in the world. Right, let's talk Valero Texas Open. Now, there's a few complexities to this week. Firstly, it's the warm-up to the Masters. Secondly, the warm-up to the Masters traditionally always used to be played at the Houston Open. And that's played at the Golf Club of Houston, which is a different kind of beast to what we're dealing with this week. That's just a rip golf course, isn't it? It's grip and rip, and it's a real bomber's golf course. Saying that, Ian Poulter won there last year. But one thing that I did find interesting, and I'll throw this straight into the mix from the outset. These are the players and the prices since 2013 of the winner of the tournament prior to the Masters, yeah?
Yeah.
2013, it was actually played here. 2013, it was played here at TPC San Antonio. The rest of them were all played in Houston. 100-1, Martin Laird. 2014, so we're now talking Golf Club of Houston, Houston Open. 125-1, Matt Jones. 2015, JB Holmes, he won at 25-1. He had already qualified for Augusta. I think he was like 25 in the world at that stage, believe it or not.
Yeah.
He'd been playing some absolutely brilliant golf, going close all the way from the West Coast.
Yeah, and he won in Phoenix as well that year.
He was certainly contended. He'd finished second or third even at Bay Hill. He was playing some awesome stuff. Actually, I think he missed the cut at Bay Hill, and that's why I didn't back him in Houston, and then he goes and wins. But he was playing some good stuff, JB Holmes. But then, 2016, 400-1, Jim Herman. Good luck with that. 2017, 40-1 was Russell Henley. And Russell Henley, I think, had a top 10 at Valspar or somewhere like that, and then came straight to Houston, where I think he'd finished something like in the top 5, 3 seasons on the trot.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were on Henley at 40-1. Again, another non-qualifier. So if we look at it, Laird, Jones, Herman, Henley, all non-Augusta qualifiers. 2018, last year, Ian Poulter had made the quarterfinals? Yeah, the quarterfinals at the match play. Got beat, and he was 51st in the official world golf rankings. So that door had closed on getting to Augusta. He then beat Bo Hosler in a playoff at 100-1 at the Golf Club of Houston. So 100-1, 125-1, 400-1 and 100-1. 4 of the 6 winners of this event in the last 3 years, triple digit. The other two, Holmes was in great nick, Henley was also in very good nick and was arriving at a golf course he liked. And that's kind of, just looking at that, is where I've kind of been thinking in terms of a landscape for my selections this week.
Yeah, you got this dynamic as well, haven't you, with the final place at the Masters. And I think there's only 16 or that thereabouts players that are playing this week who have already qualified for Augusta. The rest are
fighting
for this final spot. So, and given the history, you know, it would suggest that in most likelihood that one of those players are going to be the ones who triumph and do get themselves that final spot.
Just there was a great tweet on this list, though. I've brought it up. Bjerregaard, Finau, Fowler, Hoffman, Charlie. Holmes, Horschel, Keimer, Kim, Siwoo. Kuchar, Landry, Lee, Houtong. Adam Long, Jordan Spieth, Kyle Stanley, Kevin Tway and Jimmy Walker. Those are the 16 players who are in the Masters field for next week. So, now, as JB Holmes proved, you don't need to back instantly players that haven't already qualified to win this. But the only one that has in the last 6 years was in particularly good nick when he won it. And I'm looking down that name of that list of names, Walker, Tway, Stanley. I don't know how Kyle Stanley's still in the world top 50, but he is. Mm. Jordan Spieth, Adam Long, Houtong. There aren't many players, apart from Matt Kuchar, who are playing some of their best golf right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tony Finau's struggling, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, was he 16 to 1 for this?
16 to 1.
Doesn't
yeah.
really appeal, does it? I must say.
Would you, knowing how he works, would you be interested in backing Ricky Fowler, first round leader? Because if you look at his outings in tournaments, the week, he does always like to play the week before a major.
Yeah, he does,
and
yeah.
He also,
yeah.
he likes to play the week before the Masters. He clearly, deliberately kept away from the World Match Play last week. He's playing this. I can't have him at 10 to 1. I'm sure that he'll probably place in the top 10. And he's 22 to 1 to be first round leader. And that, I guarantee, if you looked at him, he flies on his first round of the. I remember Houston a couple of years ago, he led. And then all of a sudden, he just fell away from the top of the lead. But I think he finished fourth or fifth.
Yeah, and if it's, I'm not sure it's a deliberate thing in that, but clearly if this is just a warm-up for the main event and he gets out the blocks and he fires a nice low round that gives him the confidence that his game's right where it needs to be and he doesn't need to or want to exert himself to the extent that he really puts himself in contention, then yeah, potentially more than double the price for first round leader could be
this is it. If you're looking for a bigger price on Fowler this week, maybe first round leader's the way to go. Yeah. That's actually with Betfair, who are six places each way, 50 odds. So they're giving away an extra place. As are Unibet. I keep highlighting those two. But in the first round leader markets, they're actually giving you an extra place in the main every week.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, personally, I tend to prefer to go for far longer first round leader punts.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
I think there's far more vagaries about how 18 holes can play out, and I think it does bring different types of players into the mix for first round leader. But yes, I can see your logic with that, Stephen.
And that's the point here. I'm talking prices before we get into the challenge, but I think it's relatively worthwhile. Finau at 16s. Kuchar at 16s. Now, we know that Kuchar, when he gets hot, does tend to keep forming consecutive appearances.
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
So I think Kuchar is pretty much cast iron to be in the mix again this week.
Of the top three, I would be going Kuchar if I were backing one of the top three.
Agreed. What do you think to Jordan Spieth?
Again, his focus has got to be on next week, but his game's nowhere near it, is he? I can't get excited about Spieth any week, let alone next week, but certainly not this week. At some point, it'll come good, but.
Oh, yeah. I was watching Jeff Feinberg a few weeks ago on Pat Mayo's show, and he was saying on there, when are the bookmakers going to give us a realistic price on Jordan Spieth for the Masters?
Yeah.
And Pat was saying to him, well, you're not going to get one. And right now, best price for next week for Jordan Spieth at the Masters is 22 to 1.
Yeah. Same price as this one.
So you got it.
So equally likely to win the Valero Texas Open as he is to win the Masters. It's just not right to me.
I think that, and Jeff pointed this out as well, the difference last year with Spieth was that his tee to green game was absolutely superb.
Mm.
He couldn't putt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This year, His tee to green game's completely collapsed, and he's clearly been working so hard on his new putting stroke that the putting's come back, but you've got to hit a number of greens to be able to putt.
Yep.
And there's this rumour out there about he's visualising a closed face, isn't he, when he's swinging, and it's there's a lot of big problems with Spieth's game at the moment, mental problems. So you've got those four heading the market. Then we've got the likes of Billy Horschel, who plays well around here, we know. Jason Kokrag's at 28-1. I had a very close look at Kokrag, but I can't back him at 28-1, a non-winner. And also, you look at his record, whenever he's finished second or come very, very close to knocking on, you know, actually breaking through, his appearance the week at the time after tends to start with like a 7 on the front of it.
Right.
And then he'll start playing properly and sort of might backdoor top 10 or top 15, something like that, after he's taken himself out in round one.
Yeah, it can take... It takes a while for some of these top players to really get to grips with being able to contest each and every week, doesn't it? It's not easy.
Is there anyone at the top of the market you were interested in at all?
The only one I've backed out of the top 10 or so is Jim Furyk, and that's simply because I think Jim fits the track well in terms of the demands. It's not an easy track, is it? It's not the toughest, you know. It's not up there with the absolute toughest, but it's certainly not easy. You can have some variable conditions this week as well. Jim's striking the ball from the tee, outstanding. He has been for quite some time. I mean, he's first for driving accuracy at the Honda, third for driving accuracy at the Players, where he finished second. I mean, that second place finish at TPC Sawgrass is outstanding form. Fourth for driving accuracy, first for greens and regulation at the Valspar. These are decent efforts. And save for running into a hot Henrik Stenson last week, he'd have made it through the group at the match play as well. I think he's playing some decent enough stuff, and he's got a couple of top sixes, third here in 2013, sixth in 2014. And his form in Texas generally, he's got another 12 top 10 finishes in Texas over the years. So I can see Jim, and I've taken him with 8 places at 28. So I think he's if that's going to pay back, then I think you need some decent place equity in there as well. But I can see him coming top 8.
If he'd have won that group match, he'd be in the Masters, wouldn't he?
Oh, he's so close. Yeah, absolutely. So he's got massive incentive to go well.
So it's the same narrative as Poulter last year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's this is his one shot at it, but I think if there's a time where Jim's playing, he's playing some outstanding golf. From tee to green, he's very, very, very strong at the moment. And he's got that mentality to grind away, particularly if it is tricky. And I know there's going to be some windy days in this, as you often get in Texas, don't we? But he was the only one that I've backed and the only one that really interested me, right, in this kind of sub 30-1 or under bracket.
He was the one I came closest to, Furyk.
Mm.
It was just the fact that... Because it was interesting last year. Zach Johnson was in the mix, wasn't he? Quite deep.
Yeah.
And on that particular week, Zach was averaging, or his driving distance was over 300 yards because the fairways were so fast.
Yes.
So he was actually 30th for driving distance, Zach Johnson. Can you believe that?
Mm.
So I actually think the conditions potentially help Jim Furyk this week, because if we're getting some roll on the fairways, that can only help him.
Yeah, and you'll need some accuracy with that to keep it in the fairway. And that's probably why you find that Zach's numbers were so high, because he was hitting it straight and he was keeping it on the fairway and he wasn't running out into the rough. So his driving distance stats look pretty good. I don't see length being a hindrance here to Furyk this week. I mean, Landry won last year, didn't he? So that puts it into context, really. But yeah, it's the only one really at the top end that I can get excited about, I must say.
I think Jim and his quest to make the Masters will be the big narrative this week. And It was interesting that I think he was first for greens in regulation last time out at the Valspar.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So I'm with you. If I was going to go for anyone at the top of the market, it would have been Jim Furyk. I would take Jim over the likes of Jason Kokrag or Sungjae Im. Yep. That's for certain.
Yeah, I mean, if Billy Horschel was striking the ball from tee to green, as we know he can, then he'd be an interesting runner. But
he would, but he's not, is he? He's putting.
Not. He's been putting outstanding, which isn't his game, but his long game has just not been where it is. Perhaps he finds his long game this week and justifies 25-1, but when I'm seeing Jim at 28, you know, if you want to take less places, you get 30-1 against Furyk. I've done 28 with 8, but, you know, each to their own.
The AT&T Oaks course at TP San Antonio is not your typical US golf course. It can, it basically, they try and get it to play fiery and fast. Mm. It's a Greg Norman design, so think El Chameleon, home of the Mayakoba Classic. But it is a stretching par 72, measuring 7,435 yards. A lot of elevation changes as well. And features tight fairways at over 300 cut yards carry. Missed the fairway here, and the rough is penal. It wasn't too bad last year. Mm. The overseed hadn't taken properly. Plus, there's all manner of natural hazards. Greens are undulating, multi-tiered and exotic in their grass structure, featuring emerald, dwarf Bermuda grass, overseeded with a combination of velvet bent grass, Poa trivialis. So actually, they're very, very similar to what we saw at the Players. They're
That's
very,
right,
very
yeah.
similar to what we saw at TPC Scottsdale for the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Mm.
Scoring difficulty, as is the norm in Texas, is dictated by wind strength and firmness of the course. And it looks like the field this week are in for another tough and particularly hot test. Now, I wrote that on Sunday. And just looking at the weather forecast now, as we sit here, 9:45-ish over here, UK time. Thursday looks like it could be blowing up to around about 50 miles an hour mid-morning. It's also going to be 28 degrees.
Yep.
There is a rumour. There is a risk of rain on Wednesday night before the tournament. I'll get this to load to see what that risk has grown to. At Vundergrund, it could take 10 minutes, as you know. Friday, again, it looks like the conditions will be better for the morning starters on Friday. And I wouldn't be surprised, looking at this forecast, that potentially late, early, might get the slightly better side of the draw. It looks like it's going to be windier in the morning, and it quietens down in the after 4 o'clock. So you might find some late starters have a potential chance of a first round leader. But I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot in it. There isn't going to be a lot.
No.
It looks quite calm on Friday.
Yeah,
as well.
looking at the first round leader stats historically, there's been a very good, almost 50-50 mix of PM and AM starters. So
it doesn't
tend to give you a massive advantage, I don't think. But
okay. That's interesting. Saturday was the day that grabbed me. There's a front passing through. And yesterday it was suggesting that there could be up to 30 mile an hour wind gusts. But it was electrical activity.
Yeah.
That still goes. So scattered thunderstorms on Saturday. The chance of rain on Wednesday evening into Thursday is about 50%. So that's a 50-50 call.
Mm.
It's a 60% chance of this front on Saturday causing a bit of mayhem because it looks like it's going to rain intensely. And it also looks like that it would be electrical and it would include rain. So I would not be surprised to see the tournament not actually start on time on Saturday, and you may find that they won't start until around about lunchtime on a soft golf course with no wind. So I'm kind of in a headspace where the last 36 holes of this might be on a soft, long golf course with not a lot of wind in play. So you might see lower scores being produced across the weekend.
Yeah, so your players got to navigate the first couple of days when it's going to be a bit trickier and then make your score over the weekend.
Yes, I think so. So that's an interesting one. So someone that's very, very high on my statistics this week and has great course form and loves a soft golf course is our old friend Ryan Palmer.
Yeah.
And you can back him at 66 to 1 with one firm at the moment, Unibet. Ryan has a habit of being a bit of a bottler, but he does like a backdoor top seven.
He can produce those finishes, can't he? But they tend to be, as you say, backdoor rather than leading through. And
I was on him at Torrey Pines. He led after 36 holes. He got grouped with Justin Rose and it might have been Hideki Matsuyama, and I held my head in my hands because I knew what was coming on Saturday.
Yeah.
Sure enough, 77, 76. And then, he was at PGA National for the Honda Classic a few weeks ago. Was he in like 40th spot, 45th place, something like that? It rains, goes out there, shoots 8 under.
Oh, man.
And he said that if he'd have made a putt on the last for a 62,
I think it would have been,
62 would have been. He'd have probably had a shot of winning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a par 5 as well,
wasn't
it?
Or was it Bay Hill? It was one or two. It was one of the Florida.
Yeah, it was that final par 5, wasn't it? And he missed it. He parred it. Had a real stab at it at that point because he'd have set.
He's that kind of player, Ryan Palmer. Yeah. But his course form here is outstanding. You can see why, because he hits it relatively straight. He hits it very long. He's very aggressive into par 5s. Right. Okay. Back to the preview. So, this course, last few years, 2015, it ranked the second most difficult course on the tour. So it was actually hard. Yeah, that's incredible for a standard PGA Tour course. 2016, it was 17 out of 50. 2017, 10 out of 50. Last year, it was 12 out of 50. I think last year, they had very receptive greens because they knew that there was going to be wind for the opening 36 holes.
Yeah.
So I think what they did, they let the rest of the course be its natural self, and they went out there with the hoses and made sure the greens were very, very soft. Whether they do the same with this forecast this year, and there could be some natural rain anyway.
Yeah.
I think it will be one of these tournaments. Looking at the forecast, looking at the conditions that are likely, I think it'll be one of these genuine mid-score tournaments, 13 to 15 under wins it.
Yeah, with a lot of that score being made Saturday, Sunday, by the looks of it.
Definitely. Now, that's interesting, because if you actually look here at the past in terms of winners, you have to be in position. Andrew Landry was 7th after round 1, 3rd after round 2. Kevin Chappell was 2nd after round 2. Charlie Hoffman was 2nd after round 2. Jimmy Walker in 2015 was 1st after round 2, as was Stephen Bowditch. So you have to be traditionally on the pace from the very outset to win this.
Yeah, got to be in position at halfway, haven't you?
You got it. Okay, it's a tough golf course. We're looking for players potentially who... It's funny with Jim Furyk because he actually he follows that JB Holmes mold, doesn't he? A short price, someone that's playing some very, very good golf. So yeah, you're on Furyk, I'm not. So that's likely to be a terrible mistake from my outset. But of the top boys, I think Furyk has the best chance on this. My shortest price in this is Abraham Anser, who I managed to grab yesterday when we published on Monday at 45 to 1 with Sporting Bet.
Been heavily backed, hasn't he? He has been heavily...
Well, everyone's on him, which means traditionally that it's not a good thing. But I just like Anser. Played some very neat golf at TPC Sawgrass. And for me, I don't know what you think, but just having watched it here over the years, it really does fall into line. I'm looking at strokes gain numbers, as we do every week, taking the last three winners, Hoffman, Chappell and Landry. We look at those tournament skill averages. Strokes gained putting 11. Strokes gained around the green 38th. But listen to this. Strokes gained tee to green 4th. Well, that's often the case on the PGA Tour, isn't it? Yeah. Strokes gained approach 6th. What you don't tend to see, though, is such a high number for strokes gained off the tee, 7th. That can be very, very... That often can be the weakest number.
Yeah.
But you've got to be a very high... percentage total driver, I think, this week. Yeah, someone that can hit the ball a decent distance. Well, it can work either way. You can be Jim Furyk and hit every fairway, or you can be someone that's got 290, 295 distance and can hit lots and lots of fairways. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah, accuracy.
Kevin Chappell, yeah. You can't be flagrant off the turn.
No, I don't think so. No, there's too much danger. There's too many bogeys out there if you're too wayward from off the tee.
And if you look at Brendan Steele, who's an absolute course horse form, you know, he's a horse for the course, isn't he? You know one thing about Brendan Steele, very long, very straight. Keegan Bradley would suit this down to the ground.
Yeah.
This golf course.
If he could make a 3 foot putt.
Does help. So I'm with Ansa because Ansa has been. If there's one thing that Ansa's game is built on, it's finding fairways and hitting it a half reasonable distance. He's not the longest, but he's a good 290, 293 hitter with the golf ball.
Yeah, it's a good total
and
driver.
He hits.
Isn't it?
He is a very good total driver. San Antonio lad, that can work both ways. He's clearly a local. He's clearly going to have masses of support. He's going to be sleeping in his own bed, as they say on the PGA Tour. Has plenty of course knowledge. Two attempts here, nothing major, but back in those days, he wasn't nearly half the golfer that he is now. And I think when he's come here, especially the first time he played here, I think he missed like seven cuts on the PGA Tour, and then he came here and actually made a half-decent performance. I just think that Ansa's the sort that might use this as a platform. And actually, if you look at Herman, Matt Jones, you look at other players here, even Brendan Steele, who's won here in the past, they actually capture their first title. I mean, look at Andrew Landry last year. He was a tour maiden.
Yep.
Kevin Chappell, he won his first PGA Tour event here. And Kevin Chappell at 33-1. There's no value in that price. He's absolute rubbish. And he goes and wins because I think he'd finished 7th at Augusta. He's playing very, very good golf. Confidence boosted. He got the job done. Hasn't won again, mind. But it's that kind of event where first time winners can crop up. So I just thought Ansa very, very logically. I think he was 3rd after 36 holes and 5th after 54 holes at the Players' Championship.
Yeah.
This is clearly going to be a level down from that. This is clearly going to have less pressure. He's a good golfer, so I just thought that he was born in Texas, went straight to Mexico, and then his education has all been in the States. So he's got dual nationality, but I think Ansa's a decent shout this week.
Yeah, and we saw, didn't we, with the Australian Open where he won back end of last year, that he's well capable of getting over the line. And you know,
that's not an easy goal. That's not an easy golf course to win an Australian Open either.
No, and how much better is this going to be this week? It's not the most stellar of PGA Tour fields by any stretch, is it? So I like that.
The other thing I liked about Ansa was, for me, he's more bent grass positive, just looking at all of his results. And I think that these greens play far more like bent than they do with the overseed.
With the overseed, yeah.
So I think this will play more into his wheelhouse. That actually got me looking at our friend, the wunderkind, Joachim Niemann. And I never tipped him up. I know he has been tipped up. But Niemann is waiting for bent grass greens. And he was top five here last year.
Yeah, he did play well last year, didn't he?
I didn't tip him. There is a lot of interest in him, and I can see why. I actually think that Niemann at some point will pop when we get to bent grass, which will be very, very soon. He's clearly a bent grass positive player rather than Bermuda grass. And I think because these players have to play a huge chunk of their time on greens they can't stand, all of a sudden, you know, the form and the game starts to collapse because they've got no motivation turning up at these events anyway because they know they're going to struggle with a putter.
Yep. That only works both ways, doesn't it? Some of them are waiting for the Bermuda greens to come along in Florida and some of them are waiting for the bent. It's if you can just pick those right players at the right time with that bit of knowledge, then you can pick up a nice juicy price.
To mix it up, who's your second selection? Because I know you've got three. I don't know who they are, but I know you've got three.
Yeah, I've gone for a former world number one, Luke Donald. And this is a price play, really, because I thought 125-1 for a player who is as capable as Donald at his very best is worth taking a chance on. I know, you know, he had a terrible 2018, didn't he? But he's had back issues. It's the first time, really, he's had a lot of injuries in his career. And up to that point, he's done well. But, you know, the boy's knocking 40 now, or he is 40, so he's starting to struggle with a few of these issues. But he seems fine. He seems fit. He came out of the Valspar, and he finished ninth. He was fourth going into Sunday, and he played some really nice stuff. I mean, from tee to green, he was solid without being spectacular. But seeing as he hasn't played so much golf, his short game and his putting was right on point. He looked really sharp on and around the greens, which is good. I was really impressed with the way that he got on with it, actually. And he was 13th here when he played TPC San Antonio on debut back in 2016. He was third going into Sunday. So, you know, he's got a bit of course form there. And, you know, with this medical extension he's on, it's time for him to start playing some good golf, I think, and get himself back onto the tour full time. But I was impressed with that outing at the Valspar, I must say, and I don't see this being beyond him to get something along the same kind of lines. So I thought 125-1 was worth a stab.
What were the issues in terms of the medical? Do you know?
He had back problems last year, so it was on and off, and
golfer's curse.
Yeah, and a lot of golfers do get it, don't he? But he's you know, he said at the Valspar that he was playing injury free, but pain free now. So that's a step in the right direction. And you know, at his very very best, he was, you know, very very good from tee to green, very very good on and around the greens. And I don't think his long game is quite back where it is. Perhaps he's holding back a little bit given the back, but. You know, I think he's moving in the right direction. And could he play Sierra 125? So I can't really see a reason to not take a chance on that, to be honest.
What price do you think he's going to be at the RBC Heritage in 2 weeks? A golf course he absolutely adores.
Well, after he wins here this week, then I expect he'll be down to about 22-1.
He could be world number one before he gets to the RBC. You know, if he wins this week, gets into the Masters, wins that.
Yeah, I think
it was good to see him back, wasn't
it?
He's a very, very popular player. You know, there's nothing you can say about Luke Donald. Very nice player. Clearly an ex-world number one, one of Europe's pioneers when it came to the Ryder Cup and being part of the teams that went so well a few years ago. He was a sad miss, and it's good to see him back playing something used. Closer to where he should be.
Yeah, I think his Valspar effort surprised him, really, because I don't think he intended or expected to come out and be so competitive, but he was.
He wouldn't.
He's. It was driven from, you know, looking really, really sharp on and around the greens, and I think, you know, if he can make it through the weekend and over the first couple of days, you know, any hindrance in terms of lack of distance off the tee is not going to be a problem because it's going to be firm and fast. And then if he can make a score over the weekend with a hot putter, then who says he can't get in the mix? We shall see.
One thing I've noticed with this tournament, there's a huge link with a web.com event. And that event is the Boise Open.
Right.
Don't ask me why. I can't answer it. But all I know is Charlie Hoffman in his web.com career went very well at Boise, as did Stephen Bowditch. Jimmy Walker was second in Boise way back in 2004. Brendan Steele had a couple of top tens at Boise. So these are all players that have won. They have won this. And they played well at the Boise Open. Now, Andrew Landry was the latest in a long list. He was fifth at Boise in 2017. So that kind of got me thinking. Mm. We've also got players like Billy Horschel, who's a course horse here. Yeah. He's finished sixth in Boise. There's a whole list. I don't know what this link is. Kevin Tway, he won at Boise in 2013. He was in the top five here a couple of years ago when he was, I think he might have been a rookie on tour that year. There's a massive link between these two tournaments. Now, that isn't the main reason I've picked these. Oh, sorry, I've jumped. I shouldn't have jumped. We were talking about this off mic, because we're talking about players that are old, relatively old, but of making a comeback. One player I regret not backing. Well, there's two. One will be Jim Furyk. The second one is the second one at a good price, Ernie Els.
Yeah, he's showing little snippets.
I think Ernie Els is worth a fiver or something this week, because he played very well in Malaysia on the European Tour a couple of weeks ago, didn't he?
Yep.
And he hit tons and tons of greens.
Yeah. It's funny in Malaysia, because my pre-analysis before the event, Ernie popped up on a lot of the stats, and you know, I kind of got to the point I looked. I thought, I can't back him. I can't pull the trigger on that. So I didn't. And then, of course, you start looking at the leaderboard once it gets going, and the name's staring you in the face. But he did play well. He did play well. Might be live
third
in the
old third here in 2010, and he was 30th here last year when he was playing absolute garbage. But he clearly isn't playing garbage anymore. Now, I think as an each-way punt, and you can get 125-1, eight places each way with Betfair Sportsbook, I think that is a fantastic price for Ernie Els. Okay, this Boise link. My final two, I've only gone for three this week. My final two both have good finishes in Boise. The first one is Johnny Vegas. Now, I couldn't back Johnny Vegas last week at 16-1.
That's too short.
And that fact on the Corral is again, you know, this fact about the prices and the world rankings, again, it came to fruition.
Yep.
It was someone that off the pace that came and took that rather than someone that's at 16-1 winning it.
Yeah, expectation.
The other thing I think that got to Sung Jae In was that he knew that if he won, he got into the Masters. And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure on a player.
He will win Sung Jae In. He's too good not to, but he's still learning how to do it, isn't he, on the PGA Tour. Much is clear. He had a great chance last week.
Now, Johnny Vegas, I've gone 1.5 points each way, 50-1, with Sporting Bet I got yesterday. Seven place each way, 50 odds. He's a Lone Star-based player based in Texas. You could think of him as a resort course bully, but actually, when you dig into him, he can play on a mixture of courses. I mean, I'm seeing third at Torrey Pines, seventh and third at TPC Sawgrass. You know, these aren't bullying tracks.
No.
Fourth at Congressional. He's been his fourth at the Honda Classic. I mean, you know, these are tough technical golf courses. And 2017, third at Glen Oaks. That was the Northern Trust Open, the old Barclays tournament.
Yeah.
Played in New York. And he was a shot or two shy of Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson that week. He can play at the very highest level. And he reminds me slightly of JB Holmes from a few years ago. 10th at TPC Scottsdale, 16th at PGA National, 3rd at TPC Sawgrass. He probably turned up last week and thought, oh, I'm kind of one of the favourites to win this. And as we invariably know with a lot of these players, as soon as they know they're near the top of the betting, that doesn't fit very nicely with them. But two things really jump out at me with Johnny Vegas. Three things, in fact. He's playing very good golf. He's hitting tons and tons of greens. The other thing was, he was third at the Boise Open in 2010. So I love that link. And he's absolutely obliterating par fives right now.
He's playing well, isn't he?
He was 12 under for the par fives at the Players' Championship when he finished third. And he was 12 under last week, which again was the joint best score for the par fives last week. He was just four over on the par threes. But he was shot 12 under again on the par fives last week to finish 26th. If you look at his numbers, he's been in the top 20 for total driving on a lot of his recent outings. He's making he's gaining strokes off the tee. He's hitting tons and tons of fairways. And actually, it's his putting that's usually the weakness. He's putting very well right now. I think he's been in the top 10 for strokes gained putting, both at the Honda Classic and at the Players. So when you've got a great ball striker that's actually got real confidence with the flat stick, that's when you need to be careful with them. Also, 10th at TPC Scottsdale and 3rd at TPC Sawgrass this year. And listeners will know that both of those tournaments featured overseeded Bermuda grass with Poa trivialis and bent grass. So he clearly likes the putting surface. So I just thought 50-1, he is the sort that would just pop up and win this at a reasonable price.
Yeah, I can't dispute it whatsoever. I think he's got a great chance this week. I think the fact that you've got two different, you know, almost two a contest or an event of two halves where you've got a trickier test and then potentially a scoring test. And as you said, you know, he can compete in both of those styles. Some players, you know, you pigeonhole as simply a technical golf player. Some, you know, the excel in resort courses. But if he's got experience and ability to perform on both types of track, both types of setup, you know, both sets of conditions, then I think it sets up very nicely. 50-1 was.
He ain't a bad win player, you know.
No.
He was in the top. He's in the predictor variable ranking for wind. He's in the top 15. Yeah. He can play in wind.
Yeah.
He's also the sort, and as you said, this bangs on the nail, really. If he was within four or five shots of the lead going into the weekend, and it gets cold Saturday morning, and then all of a sudden you've got a soft golf course with barely no wind for the last 36 holes, he's the kind of player that could just shoot lights out.
Yep. Yeah. No, I like Vegas. We've talked about him two or three times over the last few weeks on the podcast about a player who we think is going to win at some point, and some point quite soon. And 50-1 is a fair price to take this week to see if it is this week.
The other one I've gone for is a little bit more left field, but I thought he was overpriced. There was a little bit of 125 at first, that disappeared. Is Scott Stallings.
Yeah.
He's another player that plays better on technical courses. He's finished 11th here as a rookie in 2011. He was 13th here in 2016. That latter performance was off the back of six straight missed cuts. and that particular year, he was first for strokes gained approach here and second for strokes gained tee to green. But as Scott tends to, he putted pretty poorly.
Mm.
But the putt has been a lot more consistent recently. And of course, he was third at Pebble Beach. He was ninth last time out at Valspar. And just those stretching, tougher golf courses, I think, play more to Stallings. And as we've learnt with him in the past, he's the sort that can string two consecutive or three consecutive top tens together when he's hitting greens and when the putter's a lot more compliant than it usually is. He's got a bit of confidence with that putter.
Yeah.
So I think he's another. Two of his three wins, 10 under at the Greenbrier Classic and 9 under at the 2014 Farmers Insurance. So he can play tougher technical or mid-score kind of tracks. And if you just look at him, PGA West, he's done well there. So we're talking Bob Hope Classic, the old career builder, Desert Classic as it is now. He's also finished in the top five at Colonial, Deer Run and Sea Island. And you look at previous winners here, Andrew Landry and Kevin Chappell, they all share those four golf courses in terms of good finishes.
Yeah.
So I just thought Stallings. I was surprised. I was expecting more kind of 66s when the shows would come up. To see him at triple digits, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. No, it's, we know he can get the job done, don't we? He's not one of these players who perennially doesn't get over the line. He has won. He's proven his ability to do that, so... Worth a chance.
I think that's good with him and Vegas. You've got guys there, three PGA Tour victories, and so they can actually grasp the mantle and win.
Mm.
we don't know with Anser. I think Anser is a good player, though, and he clearly won in Australia against a decent field. That win he had out there, Kuchar was playing, Cameron Smith, Brant Snedeker, Benny Ann, Brendan Steele. It wasn't a poor quality tournament that he won down there. It was good.
I mean, yeah, the depth started to drop away after those headlines. But even so, you've still got to beat those top players. And he did just that. So that will give him massive confidence for the rest of his career. So, yeah.
So I'm on Anser, Vegas and Stallings. Who's your final selection?
My final one, I've gone for Brian Harman, who I was really impressed with at TPC Sawgrass when he finished eighth. I think his results up until that point had not really reflected how well he'd been playing. I think he'd been playing better than his results were. And, you know, I think there were 5 missed cuts and 7 starts. So it looked pretty poor. Then finished 8th for the players. He was 2nd for his all-round game that week. His long game looked really good. I know he's not the longest, but again, going back to what we've said about the way this course was set up, particularly for the first couple of days, I don't see that being such an issue. And if he finds his way through to the weekend and it's softer, we know he's very good in the wind and he's an exceptional putter. So I think all the players who managed to get themselves through to the weekend in that and are a little bit shorter off the tee still stand a chance. I think they've got, you know, with a hot weekend with a putter, I think they've got a stab at this. And he's a Sea Island resident, so he's gonna be good in the wind anyway. But he's got a decent record in Texas, full stop. And his last 3 Texas efforts, 7th at the Dean and DeLuca in 2017, 9th at the match play in Austin last year, and then 14th at Fort Worth last year as well in his last Texas start. So he's got some decent incoming Texas form. 3 top 22 finishes here at the Oaks course as well from 5 starts. So a bit of course form as well to go with it. And I thought 100 to 1 for 7 places was worth a stab on someone, again, who we've seen can get over the line. We won at 80 to 1, was it last season? I think it was.
A
couple of seasons ago. So
I tipped him last time out. In fact, I tipped Kevin Kisner last time out. Did very little. Goes and wins the world match play. I tipped Harmon, missed the cut, but that was on the basis that I think he was top 10 for GIR at the Players. Yeah. He clearly showed a bit there. I could see him going well here.
Yeah. No, I think there's...
He's short in stature, but he actually gets the ball out there.
And his total driving at the Players was, I think he was top 15, top 20, that kind of area. So if he's keeping it in play and he's hitting it, you know, a mid-distance, then he's going to give himself a chance, particularly on firm, fast greens or fairways to start the event, and just see how he fares over the weekend. I think there'll be a few players that you could quite fancy who'll have dropped away by the weekend. So it'll be a bit of a shootout, and who's got the hottest putter on Saturday, Sunday.
And when you look at last year, Landry, Mullinax, Walker all got a US Open history to them.
Mm.
Landry, I think, was he 2nd at the US Open at Oakmont when no one had ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Mullinax was contending at the first one that Koepka won. Walker's had a top 10 in the US Open. Kevin Chappell's got a good US Open history. Charlie Hoffman has contended in US Open. I think that was the one, the first one Koepka won as well. So there's a definite US Open narrative in a lot of the names that you see at the top of the leaderboards at this tournament.
Yeah, and you can see the logic.
Yeah, Harmon was in I think he finished in the top 3, didn't he, 2 years ago?
It's
the golf course that I always forget the name of.
Was it Erin Hills one, was it?
Yes, Erin Hills. And that was clearly the one that Mullinax was contended in as well. So there's a link with Erin Hills to this. Koepka was 2nd here 2 years ago. Behind Kevin Chappell.
It's all kind of seemed to slot into place, isn't it?
I tell you one who also interested me, but I didn't like the price. But he is a real course specialist, is Aaron Baddeley.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that myself, actually. He's got a decent record here. And was he 7th or 12th last time out? So there was a couple of decent recent efforts, wasn't there?
He's doing his usual, you know, he can't hit a green for fun, but he does that all of the time. But actually, when I dug into his numbers here, he's always playing the same kind of way, but for some reason, he can get round it and he can actually find a decent amount of greens. There's clearly something about the course.
Yeah.
And I've always read with Aaron Baddeley, he always goes well in desert kind of settings, and this is quite barren here.
Yeah.
And he's just got some very, very strong numbers here. 3rd in 2010, 15th in 2013, 20th 2015, 5th 2017, 16th last year. So, you know, there's worse bets out there than Aaron Baddeley, problem.
Yeah, 50 to 1. Yeah, 7th last time.
Yeah, it's not the best of prices, is it? Not the best of prices, but I would not be surprised to see Baddeley in the mix either.
No, it could be a decent DraftKings player, actually. 8-3 for Baddeley. given that he doesn't tend to miss cuts around here, and well, his recent form, 2nd, 17th, missed cut 7th, so three very high scoring from a DraftKings perspective weeks from 4 on a course that he likes. That's could be a play, that one.
Anything else from a DraftKings perspective before we...
Yeah, I've not put a team together yet, so that was the one just caught my eye just then that looked pretty good for being part of a team, I must say. But I'll have to give it a little bit more thought over the next day or so.
Okay. I think that's just about us.
Hmm. Yeah. Masters preview later in the week, and then our pick show, as you say, early part of next week. Can't wait.
Excellent. Can't wait. Right, thank you, Paul. Much appreciated for your time.
Yeah, you too.
I'll speak to you later in the week. And thank you to the listeners. We will be back later this week, as Paul said, for the Masters pre-show. Thanks for listening. And, of course, leave us your iTunes reviews. Put your name in the review as well so I can read that out. And we'll get you on the Masters show next week. Goodbye.